kwakuwamfamnako nauvuku naulukufu atamilele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and thank you once again for tuning in to Radio Harambe, the companion podcast to our website, jamboeveryone.com. I am Dave McBride, broadcasting from the Radio Harambe studios. And joining me from somewhere in the world, as always, it's Safari Mike. Mike, where are you today?
Jambo, Dave, I am in Kakadu National Park.
Kakadu? Is that really a thing?
It's really a thing.
Kakadu National Park. I'm assuming it's not, it's spelled phonetically K-A-K.
K-A-K-A-D-U.
Kakadu National Park. Kakadu. It doesn't sound African. Kakadu. I'm going to throw out a guess here, and I think I'm going to be right.
Okay.
New Zealand.
Dave, very close. Me and the team are here in Australia.
Ah! it just had a Kiwi sounding name to it, but I guess it could be Australian too. Yep. And what are you doing there?
The team and I are studying the fat-tailed darnart.
Poor name. Poor thing got that name.
Do you have any idea what it is?
I'm going to say a bird.
No, it's a little tiny marsupial, which is a killer, one of the smallest carnivorous marsupials in the world. It weighs about 20 grams. It's called a fat-tailed because it stores fat in its tail, much like a camel will store fat in its hump.
Really?
To get over long droughts. It lives here in the desert. So me and the team are quite hot.
Okay, at 20 grams, what could it possibly kill? Mice?
Insects, lizards, small reptiles and things like that.
That's amazing. What's it called again? A fat-tailed what?
Fat-tailed Dunart. D-U-N-N-A-R-T.
Yeah, that does sound like a bird name to me. I'm sorry. I don't know. Before we get started with the news, Mike, it's been a while since we did a show. And
I thought you were going to ask me about the names of my team, because being Safari Mike, I have my team is Kangaroo Jack, Boomerang Bill, and of course Outback Shell.
Well, I knew you were going somewhere there, but I was trying to avoid the tackiness of the joke. I couldn't get past that one, I guess. That's just like, you know, one of those things you try to avoid, but you know you can't. It's been a while since we've done a show. Just wanted to thank everybody for hanging in there for a little while. For those of you who don't know, on Valentine's Day, my wife gave birth to our son, my first child. So it has been a little difficult to stay active on the website, and even more difficult to stay available for podcasting and all that goes into that. So if we are sporadic over the next few weeks, just be made aware that it is only because I haven't slept in a few days. But
well, your left eye just didn't help either.
My what?
Laryngitis.
No, I had laryngitis last week, which is what got us through to this week. What we were supposed to record last week. Still would have been a couple of weeks since that show. But on today's show, Mike and I are going to discuss the news from Disney's Animal Kingdom and the rest of Walt Disney World. There's a lot of news to go through because it has been a couple of weeks. And then in our final segment, we're going to talk Tamu Tamu. More on that later. But first, Mike, let's begin with food, which is always a good place for us to begin. There are some additional meal options being offered at counter service locations throughout the Animal Kingdom. Apparently, the Isle of Java, Dino Bites, and Harambe Food Market are going to be offering full meal options. Now, this is only for the spring. This is only for the sort of the big time, the spring break time, March 15th, I believe, through April 12th. So from 11 to 3, those three places are going to offer full meals. They will return to their original menu after 3 p.m. The Isle of Java and the Harambe Food Market are going to offer turkey sandwiches, and Dino Bites is going to offer a corn dog and chips kind of combo there. The Everest Kiosk in Bradley Falls will also offer full meal options. They're going to be from 10:30 to 5, so the full day. The Everest Kiosk is going to do, the turkey sandwiches and hot dog there. Bradley Falls is going to offer a rather intriguing-sounding Thai pork sandwich.
It's actually been there for a little while, to be honest.
Yeah, I thought so. I don't know why this made the news. Smoked turkey sandwich is going to also be available to drink Walla. I think there's going to be other stuff happening, like the carts in and around. A couple of breakfast options being added to a few places as well. I guess they're just, Mike, here kicking up the options during the busy season, but I don't remember them doing this that much, at least this expansive of, you know, this many different places to add this in the past. Do you?
True, but you have to remember that they took down an entire counter service. I mean, Flame Tree Barbecue right now is out of commission, and it's a busy few weeks. So I guess they felt they needed to add some additional places because obviously the Harambe Market is not open yet. So I guess that's why.
I don't know how much this helps. Offering a smoked turkey sandwich in five different places doesn't sound all that fantastic to me, if you want me to be honest here.
Yeah, no, not really. But you know, got to do what you got to do.
And we're adding hot dogs to a bunch of places. I mean, it would have been nice if they could have kind of kept with the history of the parks. Counter service options, which have always been pretty good and even a little eclectic as compared to other ones. But they seem to just be adding turkey sandwiches and corn dogs and nonsense like that, Magic Kingdom type stuff. Hopefully it's not a success. Let me put it that way. This was a story that creeped up on us yesterday, and it's a report that OrlandoParkNews.com has. Apparently, the Disney Worldwide Conservation Fund is going to change its name to the Disney Conservation Fund. And they, on this report on OrlandoParkNews.com, they list a few reasons for that. For one thing, they think a lot of people get the name wrong, thinking it's the Disney Wildlife Conservation Fund. I don't know why they would care so much that they got that wrong. It's not the worst error in a name I've ever heard in my life. But there are a few others as well. But also, the important thing for guests is that there's going to be a new exhibit featuring the new name and the new logo and all this kind of stuff over at Rafiki's Planet Watch. Now, the report says this, and I quote, that the exhibit is going to, through quotes, photos, artifacts, the exhibit will encourage guests to explore challenges facing wildlife and discover unique conservation solutions being implemented. The exhibit will feature the Disney Conservation Fund's new name and logo just in time for the kickoff of its 20th anniversary. Hard to believe it's been 20 years since they started that.
Yeah, right.
Highlight its efforts to reverse the decline of threatened species around the world. The new space is scheduled to debut in early April of 2015. I struggle to remember the old exhibit that's there. Sure there is one.
It's really not much to do about nothing.
Yeah, I mean, the name change, I guess, just means we're going to have a new logo and such on the and the new logo is actually pretty neat. And this is all going to be on the pins, I would imagine, that you do. Means we're going to get new donation pins. I imagine it's going to be a long time before we get those. I can't see them throwing away the old ones. They're probably going to sell them through before the new ones come out. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting story. I think more interesting, though, is sort of the history of the Conservation Fund itself. We talked about how this year is going to be the 20th anniversary. It's reason why it's 20 years and the park hasn't hit 20 years yet, still a few years before, is because for those of you who don't know, this Conservation Fund, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, was almost begun to sort of cut off at the pass any sort of protests from the animal rights activists, correct?
Correct. 1,000% correct. I'm sure Disney would not tell you that, but 1,000% correct.
So just about only a matter of a year or two after they announced the Animal Kingdom itself, maybe not even a year or two, they began with this conservation fund because they were worried about, and probably rightly so, the inevitable criticism they would get from animal rights activists. But the Conservation Fund continues. I think it does good work. I always complain that it could do a little bit more. I shouldn't say the Conservation Fund could do a little bit more. Disney can do a little bit more to promote it, in my mind, and make it more of a recognizable thing throughout the park. But let's not complain. They donate millions a year, and that's a good thing. So, Winged Encounters. This is an interesting. Yes. This is an interesting story, and a cool one too. It seems they've moved the staging area. Well, they have moved the staging area of the Winged Encounters show. Now it used to be kind of hidden, off the pathway towards a sort of cast member exit, right across from Flame Tree Barbecue. I guess is how you would best describe it.
Absolutely.
Right. And now it's moved front and center almost, right in front of the Tree of Life, in the new sort of open area that has been created there out of, I guess, what was the old Tamarin exhibit, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So this
looks good. And I like it being there. Yeah.
It looks great. It looks fantastic. I mean, if you're just. Now, I can only go by what I think you might get here, right? I don't know for sure. But imagine, Mike, being in the Oasis, coming over the hill into the view of the tree as this show is beginning, and seeing these macaws flying all in between you and the tree, all over Discovery Island and landing right there. Mm-hmm. That would be a pretty impressive thing to say.
Right.
Yes,
it's cool,
and it's a great show.
Pictures on Twitter, it looks great.
Yeah,
it is a great show. They do a nice job. It's a great way to showcase birds, particularly macaws. It's impressive to have a whole flock of them fly over your head, and now to have it right smack dab in the middle of the front of the park. It's great. I think it's a good move, and maybe when they were planning all along, it just needed to open up the front there.
When we saw it, Mike, the placement of it almost made me a little nervous for the show, that it was temporary in some way, because it just seemed to be sort of thrown in the corner, and you almost had cast members trying to go out and tell people, hey, look, we're doing this thing. And you just don't want that for a show of that quality. I mean, you shouldn't, it's something that people should be made aware of and come and see, because it's really, really good. And it's small and it's easy. It's just a little kind of thing to enhance. It's nothing fantastic, but it's as far as, there's no great investment in it or anything like that. It's not a stage show. There's not, it's nothing like that. But it's a really cool kind of conservation message and a really neat sort of experience. And kids go crazy seeing these birds flying down and landing on this thing. But now that it's moved there, it almost looks to me like they recognize that. And I don't think this is a temporary thing anymore.
Agreed. I agree. And I hope not.
Now let's stay with the animals, shall we, and go to the sable antelopes, which I'm not sure we reported on the last episode or not that five sable antelope calves were born at Disney's Animal Kingdom. I think we did. But
we might have.
Yeah, we might have. But they're now on stage at Kilimanjaro yes. Safaris. And the Disney Parks blog released some great photos of them. I've seen a couple of other ones over Twitter and social media and things like that. So they are out there, and they look really cool.
cute as a button.
Cute as a button. There's five of them.
Mm-hmm.
You like to see the quantity of them is what's impressive. I mean, it's really neat. So,
they are the symbol of Harambe Wildlife Preserve. So I'm glad another generation is along. They're very, good looking antelope. They're very kind of noble looking, really.
Yeah, very.
They're one of my favorites.
Very impressive. Very majestic mm-hmm. antelope.
Yeah, that's
for
a good
sure.
word.
Okay, finally, our last story in the local news. And I'm not sure we reported this last time about the Sumatran tiger. We got some really great news that a new Sumatran tiger is coming to the Maharaja Jungle Trek. The tiger's name is Melosi, and it's coming from the Point Defiant Zoo in Tacoma, Washington. Early reports suggested that Melosi might have been on stage already as early as this week. But Scott from Dixie Landing's radio podcast, who we recently pressed into service as our reporter and local, tells us that he went actually looking to take some photos. And they told him that Melosi will only be on stage, in the habitat of the Maharaja Jungle Trek before guests actually arrive at the park. And I suppose, Mike, you could probably tell this more than me, this is part of the sort of acclimation process.
Yes, absolutely. They're getting him used to the exhibit. They're getting him used to the other animals there. And they will slowly get him used to the public. After this, I suspect once he's on exhibit, he probably won't be on long while they're, while the park is open.
Right.
They'll probably move him off after a couple hours just to get him, like you said, acclimated. That's it. That's 1,000% correct. This is just, I don't know how long they plan on just having him on exhibit off hours. It probably won't be terribly long.
Right.
Until they at least test, at least for the time being, I wouldn't go to Disney's Animal Kingdom expecting to see him, even when he's out. On exhibit for a little while, because it'll probably be only brief stints,
right?
A couple hours here, maybe a couple hours at the end, a couple hours at the beginning, until he's sort of used to everything.
At first, these reports came over a couple different places, a couple different mm-hmm. online websites. We learned about it too, and we sent Scott out there, and before we even sent Scott out to talk to take a picture, we thought. I kind of thought, it's strange that they're bringing this guy in, they're doing this work, and I guess it's been a little while since he left Port Defiance, or Point Defiance. What I heard is that he left sometime at the end of last year.
Okay.
So he's been at the Animal Kingdom for a little while now, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was weird that Disney never promoted it, never talked about it, because they do this stuff on the Wildlife Wednesdays and on the Parks blog, and it seems strange not to do it. But I guess, isn't it a possibility, Mike, especially with what you're calling a mate partner, and especially with a predator, isn't it a possibility that these two just may not get along and he may have to go back?
Oh, sure.
So sure, that's absolutely. Probably why you don't talk about it, right? Until he's until you know things are going well.
Very correct. That is true. I mean, you want to make sure everything, because she might not want to have anything to do with him. He might not want to have anything to do with her.
Right.
It's very possible. You're going to want to test it out slowly and see what happens.
And real quickly, we've talked in the past about the Sumatran tiger because when the first tiger, which her name is Sony, first came. But I just kind of want to repeat a little bit of it. Tell us a little bit about the Sumatran tiger, if you can, if you remember it all. It is an endangered species for sure, as opposed to the ones that you're used to there, the Asian tigers, which are basically bred for captivity. The Sumatran is a endangered species of tiger, correct?
Oh, yeah, it's critically endangered. There's only a few hundred left in the wild. They are only found in the island of Sumatra, hence their name. They're the smallest of the five tiger subspecies. They're about half the size of Siberian tigers. I mean, a male yeah. Siberian tiger would be about 600 pounds. A male Sumatran tiger is only about 300 or so. So there's a big difference. And that's probably because they're from a very, you know, dense jungles of Sumatra, where, you know, you can't really be all that big because you get caught up in the underbrush and stuff like that.
Right.
I don't want to say this, they're prettier, but they are a deeper orange with usually thicker black stripes. And, you know, some people consider them a little bit more attractive than...
Oh, they're beautiful.
Some of the other tigers. To each his own, I suppose. I mean, I like Siberians, too. But
That's true.
They do have beautiful colors. They're like I said, a deeper orange, generally speaking. But, you know, they are critically endangered. There are only about 300 or 400 left, I think, in the wild. And they are part of an SSP program. So hopefully, you know, Disney's getting involved in that particular program. And hopefully, you know, we'll have baby tigers soon.
I would say they are perhaps a little less impressive than the Asian tigers because of the size. Mm-hmm. They don't look as, but they are gorgeous in their coloring. And what Mike mentioned was exactly what I was going to mention, which is that these two have been brought in here as part of the Species Survival Program, hopefully to mate and hopefully help add a tiger or two to the world population. And what a success that would be for Disney's Animal Kingdom. We'll keep our fingers crossed and hope that good news keeps coming with regards to Melosi and Sony, the Sumatran tigers. That'll do it for the local news. Mike says he's got a lot of world news to throw at me, so I'm going to get myself in a good heap of trouble when we come back on Radio Harambe.
Jumbo listeners, this is Scott from the Dixie Landings Radio Podcast. JumboEveryone.com and Radio Harambre are working to raise funds for their conservation partners by offering some great Animal Kingdom related products for sale at Zazzle.com/JumboEveryone. There's some great animal apparel and even exclusive line of not a half day park stuff, and all the profits go towards helping to save wildlife. I've got mine and a couple of them, and now you can get yours too. Go to Zazzle.com/JumboEveryone or click the store tab at JumboEveryone.com. Quaharini.
Welcome back. It is time for the world news as promised. Mike, what do you got for me this week?
Dave, we are going to go to Arendelle, one of your favorite places, and Future World, one of my favorite places. But first,
I've never been to Arendelle.
First, let's play America's favorite game. Dave, guess the price.
Okay.
Taking place on Thursday, May 14, 2015. From 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. will be the Galactic Gathering. Obviously, it's not a surprise that this is part of Star Wars weekends. It is going to give guests the first opportunity for anybody else to purchase new products created especially for Star Wars weekends. Guests who attend the event will also have the opportunity to meet Disney characters, Disney Design Group artists, and Ashley Eckstein. I'm sure, Dave, you're a big fan of Ashley Eckstein.
Who is that?
She's the voice from one of the characters of the Clone Wars. She voiced the...
Okay,
the
main, so she's nobody.
The main female character.
Okay, so let's just... Okay, so she's nobody in particular. So let's back up. You can meet Disney characters,
Probably like Jedi Mickey and stuff like that.
Okay. And then what was the other one you said?
Disney Design Group Artists.
Okay, so other people nobody knows. Okay.
And Ashley Eckstein.
Okay.
Now, here are the packages for the Galactic Gathering will include.
Okay.
You can get a special
packages.
Magic band that is exclusive to attendees. Either you get a Rebel or an Empire one. Unfortunately, you can't get both. You only get allowed one extra magic band. A commemorative trading pin exclusive to attendees.
Okay, wait a minute. So you get... Hold on. I'm going to write it down. Let me get my pen out. You get a... Magic band, okay, go ahead.
A commemorative trading pin.
A pin.
Darth Maul's Lightspeed Pass, which gives expedited entry into Darth Maul for all 5 weekends.
Is that just the weekend tchotchke shop?
Correct.
Okay.
It's a special place where they have all the Star Wars.
All right.
Weekend
so
stuff.
Entrance. So that's how much could that mean? That's whatever. It's not worth much. But okay. Go ahead.
The first opportunity to pre-purchase select merchandise.
Okay, that's worth nothing.
Including personalized name tags, D-Tech phone cases, Dooney and Burke handbags. This is my personal favorite. Special. You also get the first opportunity to purchase new designs for Star Wars themed gift cards. How exciting is that, Dave?
Yeah, wow.
And a Han Solo inspired popcorn bucket with, of course, popcorn.
Oh, so you get that. All right, so you get a box of popcorn.
That's right.
Okay.
You might want to tack on an extra $20 to whatever you were thinking.
All right.
Tickets to this event do not include theme park admission, but of course, theme park admission is required to attend the event. Dave, guess how much that is.
Okay, so just to back up, you're getting a Magic Band, which is worth maybe, what do they sell for, $15?
Something like that.
Okay, you're getting a pin, which at the most sells for $15.
Right.
You're getting entrance into this thing, expedited entrance, which it could be worth a little something because there's occasionally a line to get into this, though I've never experienced much of one. I hear there is.
It can, and it's all 5 weekends, too.
Okay, so I'm going to put a value of $30 on that, just a random value. I mean, that's not worth the price. I'm just saying it's probably half of the cost of a hard ticket event to get into that, right?
So $30 to get into a mall.
Exactly.
Spend more
Every week for 5 weeks.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so you're only spending $7. It's a $7 a week.
That's fine.
Okay, so that's not a lot, right? You can't get anything at Disney for $7. You can't get a hot dog for $7. And pre-purchasing things is worth nothing because they make so many of these things now. And all the stuff that you mentioned, not a single one of them was anything that I would think would be something that people were flying after. The people used to, it could be different now, but people used to fly after the big figs. And that was it. Mm-hmm. The pins, nobody cares about them anymore. You know, pins are a dime a dozen now.
Right.
And the Vinylmations have even gone away to a certain degree. And there's not a clamor to get any of those. Mm-hmm. So that's not included in these things. If you were including the Vinylmation,
no, it's not included. But you get the opportunity to purchase them before anybody else.
The Vinylmation, yes, but you never said the big figs in that.
No.
So you don't get that opportunity. So it doesn't include the biggest thing to pre-purchase. So I'm going to put a value of zero onto that.
Okay.
But yet I'm going to add $10 for the popcorn bucket.
Okay.
So that's 60. Hold on.
Purchase new designs for theme park gift cards.
Don't be ridiculous. So $70. $70 in value of stuff. So now the special events. If it was $120 to meet Disney characters and get a good meal and a great show at Harambe Nights to meet Disney characters and a bunch of people you've never heard of before, is worth maybe $30 to me. So I'll value the whole thing at $100. So just to be a snarky person when it comes to Disney, I'll say they're going to charge $150.
Okay.
And let me just point out that if it is $150, they're robbing you.
Okay. Dave, it's not $150.
It's more, isn't it?
It's $250.
Mike, how does anyone
is the most
do
ludicrous
this?
One I've ever gone on. This
Who
is
would
ridiculous.
Do that? Who would do that?
You're spending $250 to have the opportunity to spend more.
Mike, if Mark Hamill was there, it's not worth $250.
No, but you probably get people to pay for that, but no.
I mean, it would have to be Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill. Then
George Lucas.
George Lucas and Harrison Ford, and I'll spend $250. I mean, that's crazy talk.
What about him?
That's crazy. $250 and all they're giving you is Disney design artists? And some person who's a voice artist?
Well, I mean, to be fair, the Ashley Eckstein, she's always at these Star Wars weekends. She's always doing these Star Wars things.
But nobody knows who she is, Mike. And she's not a Star Wars.
Well, Star Wars geeks do.
Yeah, but you got to be a serious one.
I mean, I knew who she was.
You did?
I did.
That's because you have a kid, not because you're a Star Wars geek.
It's probably more because I am a Disney fan and I know she's been at the last few Star Wars. Well,
there you go. That's why. That's why.
That's probably more why.
That's nuts. That's nuts. Did they? Do you know if they did released any information on the Big Figs? I've always liked them. I have a couple of them. Well, I have one of them left.
I don't know.
Okay. I'll look and see. Because some of them are pretty cool. I have a Jedi Mickey that I got years ago. I used to have a Stormtrooper Donald, but I sold it on eBay and made a lot of money on it.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Good for you.
So what's next?
All right, Dave, let's go to Hollywood Studios. Recently, at a shareholders meeting, Bob Iger and crew announced some things on purpose. They announced, for example, the first standalone Star Wars movie will be called Rogue One, which leads me to believe it's going to be about an X-Wing squadron. They also announced that they are working on Frozen 2. Although they did announce, they did at the same time as they announced Frozen 2, made sure that the shareholders realized that they're not doing it because Frozen was so popular. They're doing it because they had a really good story for it, which, you know.
It's nonsense, but okay. You can say it, Mike. You
can
say it.
Bob Iger, when asked by a six-year-old, he let it slip that once all the Hollywood Studios renovations is over, it's going to have a new name. So Disney's Hollywood Studios will be no longer, and there'll be a third name for this theme park somewhere in the, well, a few years down the road.
Distant
anyway.
Future, yeah.
I keep hearing it's Disney's Hollywood Adventure, kind of off the Disney's California Adventure idea.
I've heard that name quite a while, for quite
a
while.
Who knows? But who knows?
We've heard that one bandied about quite a bit. You know, it's a park that's been struggling for its identity for a long, long time. So it's, you know, if they actually create an identity, that would be terrific because they've ruined the one they made to begin with. So, you know, I'm excited to learn more about it. But I want to back up and talk about the movies. I'm excited really about the idea of a offshoot Star Wars film. We've known this from the beginning. They always said they were going to do this, but now we have a date for it, and soon we're going to hear about storylines potentially, and soon we're going to hear about trailers and stuff. And you know, this expansion of this, turning Star Wars, giving Star Wars the Avengers treatment, right?
Right.
I hope they do it right. I hope they do it as well as they've done the Avengers, because there's so much potential there, and it's such an exciting concept. And the last three movies were such a letdown that it really has to be. So it really could be something special here, and I'm really excited about it. So that was really good news.
Yeah, and there was a lot of rumors that it was going to be about Boba Fett, or I've even heard like a young, you know, like almost like a a Han Solo prequel kind of like the early days. But the fact that it's called Rogue One, you know, makes me feel that it's going to be about Rogue Squadron.
Yeah,
which of course is an X-Wing squadron. It's the one that Wedge Antilles was in, and I guess Luke was too, right? When he was.
We are geeks, Mike.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible. Right? so I'm assuming that's what it's going to be about, an X-Wing squadron, which would be cool.
Very.
Might be. It could definitely be cool.
Yeah, very. Very, very cool. I love this idea. I can't wait to hear more about it. You know, a couple of episodes ago, I got a lot of people shocked at how excited I was about the Disney Cruise Line Star Wars things, and it's true. I am a Star Wars fanatic. I do not associate Star Wars with Disney, just because Disney owns them. I don't feel like it's Disney yet, but I think these films and doing this will change that for me. You know, and will kind of bring that into the fold. And if they create a great set of movies here and an enduring, legacy of films that could last for years, there's really, really a lot of potential in this. And I just, too bad they killed off Darth Vader because he'd be great in these films. But what's next?
Let's go, Dave, to Epcot, where speculation is mounting.
Oh, no.
That Interventions West is going to be permanently closing in May of this year.
For what?
Well, we don't know that yet, but a few of the exhibits, like Test Limits Lab and the IBM Think Thing, have gone or will be soon closing.
Right.
The remainder, like the Great Piggyback Adventure and the Video Playground, are apparently going to be gone. I suspect the Disney Visa characters meet and greet will probably survive. And obviously, I believe it's in this area where the Starbucks is. I'm sure that and the Club Cool will probably survive, I would suspect. But all that area, you know, south of that, so to speak, or I guess technically it would be north of that, is all going, all those attractions and exhibits inside are going to be permanently closing. Disney has not announced this officially. There's no word as to what it's going to be. Although I find it interesting, Dave, that there have been recent rumors that Carousel of Progress is going to move from Future World to where the Wonders of Life is.
I can't see them. Can you see them dismantling that whole thing and building it over there?
No, not really. But could they fit it in this area, in Innovations West?
I can't imagine they can. I mean, it's not a small building. I mean, yeah, they probably could if they really wanted to. I mean, without being able to, you know, take a tape measure to the area.
Right.
I would think they probably could. But I just don't see why they would.
Yeah, I don't know either.
For one thing, Mike, we all know that the concept of Future World is going to go away sooner or later. I mean, it's kind of going away now. You know, everything that they're bringing in is sort of, you know, slowly but surely they're getting rid of these things. And
I'm going to respectfully disagree with you on that one.
Well, I mean, Nemo, Soarin'. You know,
Soarin', okay. Nemo is, you know, that's been there for a little while now.
The future is gone in that.
But the two newest things have been Mission Space.
Well, that's not the newest. No, Soarin' and Nemo are not. I think Soarin'.
Nemo's before Soarin'. I mean, Mission Space.
Okay.
Maybe not Soarin'. And the new Test Track. The redo of Test Track was definitely more future worldly. I'm not sure if I necessarily agree with your proposition there.
Well, okay. I guess I understand that. First of all, Nemo was after Mission Space, but that's neither here nor there.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah. Nemo was like about 2007, 2008. Mission Space goes all the way back to about 2002. So I would imagine there's a good four or 5 year difference there. But that neither here nor there. I also think that you have to bring in the whole future, the whole, you know, the rest of the area, the whole sort of future bent that was involved in the whole, you know, Communicore, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's all gone away. It's just, to me, it's just slowly fading. I really have a hard time believing that if they redo Imagination, they're going to redo it to something with a future theme to it. You know, even the, I mean, they got to get rid of the Ellen thing sooner or later. You know, maybe that would stay as something along those lines. But the overarching, you know, I mean, there once was everything in that area being related to the future. That's not the case anymore. And I don't think that's ever going to be the case again.
Okay.
So they could do whatever they want in these places. We all knew that I'm going to call it Communicore because that's what it'll always be with me. We all knew this was going to go away eventually because this stuff is too hard to maintain. The future nowadays moves way quicker than it did in the 1970s. And things go out of date within months as opposed to years like it was when this whole idea, the whole concept began. I understand that and I accept that. There's no problem with that. You know, I just feel bad for those people who see what we have now at Future World and have never got a chance to see what it once was, because it really once was, you know, a very thought-provoking and very cool place. And now it's kind of a hodgepodge, and it's, you know, there's a lot of closed buildings and shut-off areas, and that's a shame. And here comes another one. So it's, you know, a lot of it, it's starting to look a little bit of its age, too, in some respects. So it's, you know, I hope... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I can't imagine they're going to leave this closed. I mean, it's not like Wonders of Life that's off to the side, or, you know, the empty show building that they never used in Germany. I mean, this is like smack dab in the middle of the park. They're going to have a hard time keeping that empty.
Yeah, but nobody goes in it.
That's true, but they're at least going to, I mean, if nothing else, they'll put in food or shops or something.
I doubt it. I really doubt it, Mike, because nobody goes in it. People don't walk in it. There's nothing to draw people into those buildings anymore, and they're not going to invest the money to put things into there. Because, I mean, they will eventually, but they're not going to do it right away. So they may change it and do something there. You're right. Maybe they'll put in a food service thing or something like that, but it's certainly not going to be anything future. It's not going to be anything like the original idea. The original idea is gone when it comes to CommuniCore. So it's a shame. I hate talking about Future World. I really do. Mike will tell you that Epcot was once a place that I just adored from gate to from start to finish of the day. I just loved every minute of it. And it seems like every year something's falling apart in Epcot. And it's, you know, and here comes another one. But this was a long, painful death, CommuniCore, you know. This has been coming to this for quite a while. The fact that its doors have been open as long as it has is, you know, surprising, to be honest with you.
I still love Future World, though.
I did once love Future World. I don't have that love for it anymore.
I still love it. I still love Spaceship Earth. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, but I love this is what I mean. If I never knew the original two versions of Spaceship Earth, if I never saw those, I probably would really like the Spaceship Earth that's there now. But the Spaceship Earth that's there now is kind of stupid.
What original two versions?
The original version, and even the original the original two I would say versions, but the original two narration versions, the Walter Cronkite and the Jeremy Irons.
Well, there was somebody before Walter Cronkite,
right?
Though.
So you're right. So the first three.
Yeah, I forget the guy's name.
I forget him too. Name? But the park, the ride itself didn't change much. It was just the spiel that did. So that original thing I loved. And then they started messing around with it, and like a lot of these things, they just haven't improved it. You know, and a lot of times they don't improve it, and that's what's gone wrong at Disney. I mean, that's what's gone wrong at Future World. They killed Imagination. They killed Test Track. I really don't like the new Test Track at all. Right. And, you know, Mike, would you rather have Nemo, or would you rather have Seabase Alpha?
Oh, Seabase Alpha.
Okay, so clearly. Right? So that's why, I mean, Future World to me is one of those things that I wish I never knew how good it once was, because it once was great. And I won't even say it was great in the original. I liked the original Test Track when it first opened. I was good with that.
It was okay.
Okay, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't against that particular
change. Happened to World of Motion, right?
Right. But ever since then, the plussing that they've done to these other attractions has just been one bad one after another, and it's just...
That's true.
It's so annoying. It's, you know, and I just don't have any faith over there anymore, so they got to kind of change my mind. Anyway, I've rambled again.
Lawrence Dopkin, Dave.
Lawrence Dopkin?
That's the original narrator. And it changed in May of 1986.
Okay, so I saw
Walter.
To Walter. I don't remember before Walt, but I was definitely there. I just don't remember it.
Yeah, me too.
I remember it as well. I always say that the best years, there was one brief moment where Horizons and Test Track were both open. And that was
and Seabase Alpha.
And Seabase Alpha. Yep. There's one brief moment there. So anyway. Now that I've alienated every Disney Epcot fan under the age of 40, what's next?
I think most of them would agree with you. Dave, very briefly, the Aloha Isle and Sunshine Tree Terrace have swapped locations. So now Aloha Isle is where Sunshine Tree Terrace used to be, and selling its Dole Whips and whatnot. And the Tree Terrace is now in that little area across from Swiss Family Robinson, where it sells citrus swirls. Sooner or later, the Orange Bird will make its move over to its new location. Some people believe that this could have something to do with the fact that we're getting a new restaurant where the veranda is, and sooner or later, the old Aloha Isle section or whatnot will be, you know, contained within the new restaurant area that might go away eventually.
I think the Sunshine area is probably a little bigger too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the counter.
Yeah, the Aloha Island. Yeah, that spot where they had the Dole Whip was kind of created a bottleneck right
tough,
there.
Tough. Yeah. That's probably a good move then. Cool.
Yeah, it might be. And I don't understand why, you know, I don't understand why they can't put Dole Whips and Citrus Swirls in the same location. I mean, is there some sort of issue with that? I don't even know.
Who knows?
But anyway.
But if you're really a big fan of Citrus Swirls, it's nice to not have to raid on that line.
That's true. That's true.
Because it can be pretty impressive line over there.
It can get a little rough. Yeah. I'll give you that.
All right. What's next?
Dave, Walt Disney Resort will kick off the coolest summer ever.
Mm-hmm.
We got more Frozen stuff coming, including a special 24-hour event, which is not so special anymore since they've been doing it every year for the last 4 or 5 years. It's hosted by Olaf from Disney's blockbuster animated hit Frozen, which you may or may not have heard of.
I have heard of it. I've never seen it, but I've heard of it.
The Magic Kingdom will be open for 24 hours from 6 a.m. on the Friday, May 22nd to 6 a.m. Saturday, May 23rd.
Cool.
Guests are invited to come in costume to show their Disney side. There will be a whole many attractions and stuff will be open the entire 24 hours. Some of the other things coming along for the coolest summer ever that Disney has announced.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, basically most of the Frozen summer stuff that occurred last year in Hollywood Studios is returning, including the parade, the stage show, and the fireworks. Cool thrill rides. So Disney's the thrill rides that have been around for Disney for years. Disney is using this as part of their campaign. I'm not sure what Expedition Everest has anything to do with the coolest summer ever.
What are you talking about? We're not going to have Olaf on Expedition Everest, are we?
No.
Okay.
They're talking about the highlights. This is the coolest summer ever. And one of the highlights.
Let me get a drink. Hold on.
Cool thrill rides, which include, you know, they just name some of the big rides. Star Wars Weekends, which of course has nothing to do with Frozen either.
Right.
But that's part of the coolest summer ever.
Okay.
New entertainment acts at Epcot, which have been going on for several months now. And new restaurants and shopping, including some stuff opening up in Downtown Disney, which we've talked about. So really nothing other than the 24-hour event.
Disney. Come on. How stupid do you think people are? Come on. Stuff like that just bugs me. I don't care about the Frozen thing. I've never seen Frozen. Don't mean anything to me. But come on. You can't release it. Do some sort of promotion, and your promotion is we'll give you everything we've already given you. I mean, that's nonsense. What's next? Please, let's get past that. That's going to get me in a lot of trouble.
The only thing, like I said, is the 24-hour event.
But they do that every year. But they do it all the time. So now they're just slapping Olaf on the T-shirt, whatever.
I'm not sure.
I mean, that's what.
Yeah. Last year? One year they did like the Monsters Inc. thing because that was the movie coming out.
Yeah.
And then they had the leap year in 2012 where they did it on Leap Day, et cetera, et cetera.
So instead of having like things like the Year of a Million Dreams, which I also didn't like, but it still was a thing that everybody, you know, got involved with.
Right.
You know, now, and other kind of promotions over the course of the years, this is what we get for this year, is a summer of things we've had for years and, you know, for months and months and have nothing to do with this promotion, but.
Pretty much.
You know.
Pretty much.
Nonsense.
Dave, one more story for you.
Good.
Disney has officially announced something we've been talking about for a while. And that is a new theater is coming to Soarin', and a third track is definitely going to be built at Toy Story Mania. Okay. The one at Toy Story Mania is going to be part of Soundstage 1, where they're going to build a new track, and they've been working on it since this past October. You know, this is going to help alleviate some of the, well, in theory, some of the FastPass Plus problems that they've had with those two attractions. But, you know, Disney has received some criticism for not building new attractions, just adding capacity to existing ones.
Exactly.
But I don't really necessarily have a problem with it as long as they do other stuff.
I don't have a problem with it. It's just completely the wrong way you should look at when you're charging $100 a day for people to get in. the solution to your problem shouldn't be let's build a bigger capacity. It should be let's build more options. The problem is everybody's trying to do Toy Story Mania and Soarin' because they're the only things at those parks that everybody wants to do. So right. Make more things that everybody wants to do. You know, change the, update the Rock and Roller Coaster into something. Make something that people care about at the Imagination Pavilion. That's how you change these problems. That's the way Disney addresses these issues. Not this. I mean, this is such a Bob Iger thing to do. It's unbelievable. I mean, this is such a bean counter decision. You know, well, the cheapest thing would be just to add more seats on the ride, and we'll get the fast passes more available, and we can advertise it better, and it won't be such a mess. I mean, it's the easy way out. I mean, fine, it's fine. I'm glad I'll be able to go on Soarin' a little bit more so than I have in the past. And I'm especially glad, Mike, and we've talked about this a million times, that people can go on these things. You know, the whole FastPass Plus thing, Mike and I have talked about it, has shut out people who aren't dialed in to this, mm-hmm. You know, who go to Disney once in their life, who don't know about booking him however many months in advance and don't realize you can't do this. And they go in a busy time and they can't see these marquee attractions. So maybe this helps get rid of a few of those people who have gone through that. But,
agreed.
But you know, I just don't think that's the way you do it. I think you do it by building something just as good.
And, two things I'll say about it. One is that if this gets rid of the tier system at those two parks, because those are the only two parks that have it right now.
Well, that's a great point, yeah.
I hope that then I'm okay with it.
That's a great point, and I agree with you entirely on that.
And also, I would say that as long as this is not the only thing, and I'm concerned, Dave, that it really is kind of the only thing at Epcot, except, you know, they're replacing Maelstrom with a Frozen ride. I mean, I don't see... I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, maybe they are bringing the Carousel of Progress over. Maybe they are going to redo Imagination.
Yeah.
Maybe they are going to, you know, do something with the Wonders of Life Pavilion. Maybe they are going to build a new a pavilion in World Showcase. But as far as I know, all they're doing to, you know, move Epcot along is replace Maelstrom with a Frozen ride and add a theater to Soaring. And there's no question, Dave, that they're doing a lot more than just this at Hollywood Studios. I mean, that's obvious. They're going to be building Star Wars stuff. They're going to be building Pixar stuff. You might be getting Cars Land. You might be getting a couple of big stars. Who knows? I mean, but they're clearly doing a lot more stuff at Hollywood Studios. I'm concerned that they're really not doing that. This is the solution at Epcot, which I'm not a fan of.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Unfortunately.
I think you might be right. Okay, is that it for the news?
That is it, Dave.
All right, we're going to come back in just after just a short break and talk about Tamu Tamu.
Hi, Explorer Mickey here. Did you know there are only a few thousand great green macaws left in the wild? There are such beautiful birds, but people are causing them to disappear. But we can help. The AURA Project works to save the habitats for lots of different kinds of macaws. They also help rescue birds and even hatch baby chicks to keep the population growing. So we need to help them do all of that good stuff by going to theauraproject.org and making a donation. Every little bit counts.
So, despite what evidence may suggest, I do actually commit a lot of time and energy into preparing for this show, especially the feature segment, which is what we're at now. Well, let me explain to you a little something. This is how these things work. I text Mike usually a few days before we before our time to schedule time to record, get an idea of what he is thinking would make a good topic, and then that gives me a few days to sort of do some research, write my intro, which is what you're listening to now, and get ready. But not with this particular topic. You see, a couple of days ago, I wrote Mike and I said, "What topic would you like to do for our feature?" And Mike said, "Why don't we do a review? How about Tamu Tamu? To which I exclaimed, isn't that a little boring? Now, Mike promises me that it is not. That this is, in fact, a very appropriate topic for the feature segment. So without further ado, we're going to turn this over to Safari Mike to tell us about Tamu Tamu.
Sure.
Mike, why is this such a topic that you insisted we do it?
Well, Dave, there's a couple of reasons. One, and I'll go over sort of the outline right off the bat there.
Okay, good.
One is, it's number one, it's one of my favorite counter services in Disney's Animal Kingdom.
Okay.
Number two, it has had a somewhat interesting past as part of the park. And number three, it's somewhat interesting as to what's going to happen with it in the future.
Okay.
Let's talk about where it is and first.
Okay.
It is, of course, for people who don't know, when you cross the bridge into Africa, it is the building right there on Old Sekone Road. As you look right to the right, it's sort of this open little corner refreshment stand.
Right.
Behind it is this old crumbling fort, which is the seating area for Tamu Tamu. And it is a beautiful little area. I'm sure many of you have seen it. You know, it's got all, it looks like, basically the idea is that this fort was one of the original structures of old Harambe, and it burnt a long time ago, and you can see all the charred kind of portions of the wall and stuff. And in fact, for those people who are interested in this kind of stuff, there is a hidden Baloo and a hidden Scar contained within that kind of like the charred sections of the wall. There's a sausage tree in there. There is an old, you know, there's actually a little corner that is a little bit more elaborate. The walls look a little fancier, shall I say. And that is the captain of the fort's quarters. So there's a lot of theming and stuff going on in that little area. And there's a lot of theming going around Tamu Tamu itself. It also is the area where you could see that the town of Harambe was originally built in 1420, at least the fort was. And there's a little sign that shows that right there.
Right.
So that's sort of the setting. And, of course, it is a counter service restaurant currently. And it serves, you know, this beef in a pita. There's a chicken salad. It has changed menus recently. There was, for a little while, they tried curry, chicken curry and vegetable curry there.
Right.
But perhaps people may remember, when this originally opened, and Tamu means sweet in Swahili, it was an ice cream stand when the park first opened.
That's right, it was.
Tusker House at that point in time.
Forgot about that. You're right, it was.
Tusker House was, for people who don't recall this, was originally a counter service restaurant.
That I remember.
Right, and it was switched over to a full, you know, a sit-down meal.
Yeah, it was a counter service restaurant like Pizzafari. It was an indoor...
Correct.
You'd go and sit in one of those big, you know, they had a huge amount of tables. It looked almost exactly the same, except the buffet area was a counter, was multiple counters. I may have pictures of that somewhere if I look around.
Sure, and actually, if you ever go, not to the, you know, get too distracted here, if you go into Tamu Tamu, Tusker House, into the buffet station, you can actually kind of make out where the old counters were.
Right.
You know, they're kind of occupied now by these carts that, you know, serve out the buffet stuff.
Right.
But that's how the counters were set up in the old days. And at that point in time, Tamu was just an ice cream stand. When the Tusker House closed and became a full-service sit-down meal, Tamu Tamu became the counter service. And at that time, it just served cheeseburgers, which is not very, you know, African, really.
No.
And it was like that for a while. They had like turkey and Swiss on focaccia bread, and I think they even had like a tuna salad and a pita, and they had cheeseburgers for the basic. It was kind of basic,
yeah.
Theme park fare. More recently, within the last, and that was as late as 2011.
Really?
More recently, it has served this beef sandwich, which is really, really good. It has homemade potato chips. It get a really good chicken salad. Most recently, it has started serving pineapple soft serve. For whatever reason, they can't call it Dole Whips. They call
it
pineapple soft serve. That's exactly what it is.
Right.
And you can also get it with rum there, too. And that is kind of the history of the food served at Tamu Tamu. Do you want me to... Why don't we stop there, Dave?
Okay.
Talk about what are your thoughts, first of all, on the food at Tamu Tamu?
Okay, can I offer a mea culpa here and tell you I haven't eaten at Tamu Tamu in probably... Oh, boy, it's been a long time, Mike, since I've gotten anything at Tamu Tamu.
And what did you have there?
I think it goes all the way back to the cheeseburgers.
Well, I can tell you, Dave, I've had most of the stuff there.
I have not. I mean, no, wait a minute. Did they do... when they changed from cheeseburgers, what was the signature menu item?
Well, for a while there, it was the slow roasted pulled beef sandwich.
No, I didn't have
with
that.
The mint yogurt cucumber sauce.
Yeah, I did not have that. But there was
very good.
I thought there was another. I thought there was another one of some kind, another kind of signature dish like that. Like a wings or something like that, and I can't remember what it was. But I'm sorry. Go ahead. I can't remember what I had. Nothing.
That's okay.
Nothing extraordinary. That's really my point. Nothing that really stood out as anything great. That's
well.
What.
I think Dave, you need to go back.
Well, I definitely do. There's no doubt about that because they have changed it quite a bit.
They have
since the last time I ate there.
Yeah, I mean they have like this pulled beef sandwich now. That has, it's in a pita. It's really good. They have a roasted chicken salad. They actually have a pretty good chicken salad sandwich there. And they have a quinoa salad, which is their vegetarian item.
I have quinoa everywhere.
For a while there, they had a chicken curry. It was very mild, from what I understand. And
right.
a vegetarian curry as well. Again, quite mild, but good.
Didn't they have chicken salad?
Yeah, a chicken salad in this thick bread. It was quite good.
Right, but not a salad with chicken, a chicken salad sandwich.
Correct.
Yes, that is what I had last. That was good. Yes, I had that recently. I had that as recently as...
Oh, yeah, that's still there.
Yeah, I had that recently. That's the last thing I had.
And they also do, like, these homemade potato chips there that are quite good.
Yeah, Corinne likes those.
Yes, they've also started serving breakfast there, too, for
really?
An egg sandwich... and things like that. I don't recall exactly what was on their menu for breakfast, but I think French toast sticks maybe too, something like that. So that is the menu, and it's actually quite good. It's one of my go-to spots. That and Flame Tree probably are one and two for me for counter service at Disney's Animal Kingdom. Now, the interesting question, Dave, and maybe something we should discuss for a few moments. What is going to happen to it once the Harambe Market opens right around the bend?
Yeah, and that's always been the thing people have, that's what we've always talked about, is because there is going to be obviously a sea change, a major shift in counter service in that area. There's no doubt about that. That is on its way. That's coming down the line for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Disney has always had a problem with this area because there really is no major counter service here once Tusker House became full service. And then when they moved the Festival of the Lion King to right over near it, you would get hundreds of people streaming out of this, or you get hundreds of people streaming out of this theater. Many times they're looking for a bite to eat, and Tamu is just not set up. It's for people who know it. It's small. There's one little window where you can line up to get stuff. And it's actually doesn't really have much of a kitchen back there.
Right.
A lot of the stuff that they make has to be made over at Tusker House and brought over. So it's really not set up for large groups of people.
Right.
All of a sudden showing up at the door looking for some sort of food. And that's part of the problem and part of the reason why they've kind of changed their menu here, back and forth, because just the way the kitchen's set up, just how big it is. They really want it set up so that it can serve people fast. So now that the Harambe market is coming in the not too distant future. It'll be interesting to see what happens to Tamu Tamu. One strong possibility is it goes back to what it was at the beginning, and that is an ice cream shop. I mean, that is what the name means, essentially, sweet. Maybe it'll just be Dole Whips and some other ice creams. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
It is small. It does lend itself to that kind of thing, to some more specialty item. That's probably where it's going to go, to something along those lines. I would, if it's going to stay, if it's not going to do something completely off the wall, do something, if they're just going to get rid of it and use the, use the space for more seating, because there are some seats back there, and who knows what they're going to do. I think it's going to stay because it is a beautiful building and it does work well in the area. Yeah, I would say you're probably right, Mike. Maybe a drink stand like Drinkwala. Mm-hmm. But over there, who knows? It's hard to say without knowing what's going in the market. It's hard to say what the future holds for it because we don't know what we're going to get in there. So,
yeah, but we know there's going to be food. There's going to be counter service. There's going to be plenty of, it's big. I mean, there's no doubt it's going to be big.
Yeah.
It's going to be capable of serving.
But they could have an ice cream stand in there, which means they wouldn't turn Tamu Tamu. They could have a beverage stand, which means they wouldn't turn. But I would think it would be something like that. I would think it would be something more of a specialty item like that. I mean, it would be great for some. It would be great for something that, people go out of their way for, like the Dole Whip or something like that. One of those. Mm-hmm. What I hope is that they are going to turn it into a kind of a specialty item, that it is something that becomes a signature of Tamu Tamu. But my guess, Mike, is it's going to be probably drinks and or like ices or something like that because of the name.
Mm-hmm.
The refreshments and the sweet.
Right.
Or something like that. So, yeah, maybe like, how about like smoothies or something like that? Or, I would hate that because it doesn't really fit with the African thing. But, what else could they do?
Correct. It is a theme park. You
got to have that. Yeah.
Ice cream. And
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. You got to have that. It's a good question. We shall see. And the backstory from it is fantastic. I wanted to mention that. I didn't know we were going to get something good there for sure.
I love the seating behind there is one of the best spots.
Yeah.
In Disney's Animal Kingdom.
It really is.
The crumbling fort kind of feel to it with the sausage tree around you and all this kind of stuff. And they actually use it quite a bit for events. Sometimes you'll go there and that, you're not allowed in there because they're having some sort of corporate event. You could do a wedding in there.
Yeah.
They do that kind of stuff.
It's especially really after the park
closes.
It's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really nice area and it's largely looked over by people. And it shouldn't be.
It is.
It's really sweet.
It's kind of hidden, but one of the problems with Tamu, I think, has always been just a lack of a variety in a menu. I like the food items there. I like the pulled beef sandwich. I like the chicken salad.
Mm-hmm.
There's no real kids meal. I mean, I think they have like a snack pack or something like that for kids. That, just basically a yogurt and some carrot sticks and some apples. That kind of stuff.
How exciting!
So. Yeah, when they open up the Harambe market, you can be sure there'll be some real kids items here. So that's one drawback. It's not really good for little kids.
Right.
But other than that, I would give it, if I was going to give, I don't know, what do we usually rate these things out of?
5 stars.
I would probably give it
4.
3.5, 4, something like that.
Let's see what you gave it on, assuming you wrote it.
I don't remember if I on our website.
On the webpage. You gave it 3.5 stars.
There you go.
So you're consistent.
That's right. I like the pulled beef there, Dave. It's quite good. There's nothing better than grabbing a meal from there and then grabbing an adult beverage from the Dawa bar, which is right across the path from it.
I would agree.
What would you give it? If you gave it stars, what would you give
it? It's hard for me to say. There are a lot of places I like to eat at Disney's Animal Kingdom, and this has just not been one that I've kind of, attached myself to over the years. It's just not one that I've that I go to quite a bit. And I think I never really knew why, but I think you've explained it. It is kind of small, and it's like, you know, it's you pass it by sort of quickly, not really even knowing that you're doing so. So I think before I give it anything like that, I think I gotta experience it again. You know, I think I gotta see it again and do it one more time, because it's got potential for sure. You know, I like it. I like the building for sure, and I remember having that sandwich and liking it as well. I just haven't been there long enough. So I wouldn't want to give it stars because I'm not familiar enough with it, to be honest.
I think it probably scares off a lot of guests.
Because the name?
I pulled up a menu right here. Well, not just the – here's – you go walk up to the counter, and this is what you got. Slow-cooked pulled beef sandwich, which is called spicy beef with a mint yogurt cucumber
sauce.
Yeah,
they don't do a good job of naming stuff. We've said that a million times.
Yeah.
I mean, the best thing I've ever had – at Disney's Animal Kingdom was the African spice cake. The only reason why it's not there anymore is because nobody would buy it because they don't know what African spice cake means.
Right. And here's the second thing. Roasted chicken salad sandwich. Diced chicken, diced fruit, blended with mild African spices, served on a multigrain bread. Yeah. And then a quinoa salad. I mean, those are the three items, besides a fresh fruit salad in the kids' pack. I mean, I could see the, you know, typical theme park cheeseburger kind of family looking at that going, no, we're not doing that.
Exactly. That's the problem.
Even though it's delicious.
Exactly. You're 100% right about that. That's the problem. You can't, they've done that too many times with some of these great items. They've ended up casting stuff aside because of a basically bad marketing, bad naming. It just, you know, they don't need to do that. They could, it doesn't make any sense to do that. But anyway, that's that.
All right.
So is that it?
That's it.
Well, I think that you've exceeded my expectations. Let's put it that way. Are you proud?
I am proud. I'm legitimately fascinated to see what's going to happen with this once
the
big Harambee market opens. I'm very, very curious.
I agree. I mean, that it's, you know, it's one of those things that we've been saying from the beginning is going to change Africa completely. There's a lot of things. Is what's it going to look like when it's done? Is that fruit market stand still going to be there? If not, that's going to open up a lot of space that's right there. So now we're going to have a wide open area in front of Kilimanjaro Safaris that we've never had before. So there's all different types of things that the ripple effects that's going to happen from when this opens, and it's really interesting to see, because this is going to be a big year, and this isn't even the biggest of years coming for the park, but this is going to be a lot of information, big stuff coming soon, and we should learn about this soon because progress seems to be making its way. So
yeah, I mean, it can't be too much longer.
Yeah, it's right around the corner. So anyway, that will do it for us. Don't forget to read our website, jomboeveryone.com. You can find everything on there you need to know about the Animal Kingdom. Also, we'd like to point you to the store. Buy something at our store. All of our profits go to conservation. I have some new things in the work that probably won't happen until after the summer, depending on how life... continues to change for me as time goes on, but we are working on some new things, so always check back for that kind of stuff. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Radio Harambe. You probably already follow Mike, but if you don't, he's at Jombo Everyone. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, all that kind of stuff. Find that stuff at jomboeveryone.com. So I guess that will do it for Safari Mike. I am Dave McBride. Kwaherini, go well, and thank you for listening to Radio Harambe. Now, to Kupu Atamilele. Kwaku Walfamelako. Now, to Kupu Atamilele.